It's Howard Simon and Jeremy White.
Johnson into the end zone, intercepted. 2 yards deep in the end zone by Taron Johnson, and he brings it out. He may go all the way. The 30 gets a block at the 20, 10, 5, touchdown! Taron Johnson goes 102 yards.
Howard Simon.
I'm telling you right now, I'm not going to be a sports fan in my next life. I'm going to get into art.
Jeremy White.
I got something I'd like to discuss.
No. 888-552-550. But it was a good try on your part.
I'm sorry.
On WGR Sports Radio 550.
I actually thought you were playing the Trey White interception when I heard Murph interception. I thought, you know, Trey White against Fitz, right? Like at the 2 yard line or something like that, right? Close to the Bills end zone.
Yeah, that would have been the 2019 season against
Miami. That's why because I'm in Miami mode. I thought that was the Trey White.
I was just about to say, I'm not going to play the Trey White interception from Sunday because it wasn't an interception. He got penalized.
No, yeah, not. I meant for the the other one.
I have the clip saved. It's just
no, that's right. I'm just saying. That's I heard Murph an interception, and in word association, the first thing that popped into my head was Trey White against Miami. Well, Bills were trailing at that point in that game.
They
I think, and that
changed the tide of the game.
It did. That's
a a turnover on Sunday might have helped them out. They had a couple chances and missed. But
I was just looking for both of you to appreciate the fact that my memory was actually correct on something for the rare time it is on the show. Happy Thursday. What's going on, boys?
Oh, not much.
It's dark
out. I'm actually excited. It's not the right word. I'm eager for this Hard Knocks announcement.
Yeah, but
because.
But,
as it stands, I don't care about Hard Knocks.
That's why I was curious why you were eager, because you kind of wrote off
Hard
Knocks.
I wonder if I will care about Hard Knocks, because they're going to do something good with it.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Brayton on this one. I'm going to say, Brayton, what's the over-under on the percentage chance Jeremy cares about tonight's announcement?
I would say it's as close to a 0% as it's going to be.
Okay, I wouldn't go zero.
I don't even know what it is.
Yeah,
that's the point.
But we know you. I'm going to go...
I care about lots of things.
17%.
I care about good things. Will it be good? If it's good, I'll care about it.
What are the chances it's going to be good? I don't think it'll
Again,
be good.
Again, as close to 0%.
Zero, right? Yeah. I don't. Now you have me. Usually, on Thursday night and Sunday night, when that first half game clock ticks to zero, lights out, good night, everybody. Now I'm wondering if I should actually, because they're going to go to break, of course. And so I got to sit through the commercial break. Now I'm wondering if I should actually stay up. I'm sure they're going to tease it throughout the game. Hey, make sure you stay with us at halftime. Big announcement coming up. So I got to decide now whether I want to stay up the extra 10 minutes to actually see what they're going to announce.
Yeah,
I suppose
Well, the other thing I want to know is, will it leak? Will they not do what the NHL did, which is basically tell everybody their news before their big announcement? Remember the expansion draft? They had an expansion draft. Hey, roster to be revealed tonight. Actually, you know the entire roster.
Oh, that's right.
Please watch anyway.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, the drama. Oh, no kidding. Wow. They took who off the Sabres roster? I'm going to go, it won't leak. I'm trying to think of historically what the NFL is in terms of leaks and things getting out before they actually have shows.
They do embargo the tweets on their own draft picks.
That's right.
Right?
From ESPN and NFL Network.
Yes, that's right. So they've done a good job with that. I guess I just wonder, you know, first off, to tease an announcement like this, it's got to be something somewhat good. Otherwise, we'll make fun of them, which, you know, I'm also looking forward to that. See? Even if it's bad, I'll be like, oh, good. Now we can make fun of them for that tomorrow.
Well, but I don't want you – I mean, you're not going to build yourself up over the course of the day to a point where you're so excited that there's a letdown at, let's see, 8:20 game. It's probably about 10 o'clock, I would think. Around there is when the announcement will come down. I feel like I'd be worried about I don't think you're going to – right? You're not going to be like going throughout the day and tweeting a countdown clock. You're just more curious than excited.
I won't have any time throughout the day to do anything like that.
Why? So, is there something going on in your life we don't know about?
I'm generally busy around here.
Are the Twins staying up for the big announcement?
No, they're definitely not. We'll be getting them down as soon as possible. That's the plan every day.
You two have to go to bed.
Yeah, time to go to bed.
Throwing the old Barney's I was going to say tape, but it's probably Barney on the computer now. Let them watch Barney on the computer and get them to bed early.
They're not at the age yet where they care about watching anything other than
shows, right?
No, the best entertainment they've got this thing that plays music and flashes like a blue scene and has bubbles or something, like Baby Einstein thing.
Ooh, it sounds like, you know what? I might enjoy that before going to bed.
It's supposed to soothe, and it works.
Yeah?
It does work. So
can you send that to me on Sunday, depending on how the game goes?
Sure. You can just stare into it.
Yeah.
I, speaking of Sunday's game, I am not going to say that I'm nervous.
Yeah.
But I think I have a healthier respect for Miami than a lot of other people do.
Oh, I have a healthy respect. I feel more respectful of them than I did of Pittsburgh.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, I do. I really do. I had a general I shouldn't say that. Yeah. I had a general lack of respect. I knew Pittsburgh's defense was good. I think Pittsburgh's defense is better than Miami's defense. I knew their defense was good, but I had a general lack of disrespect, I guess, or lack of respect, I should say, I'm sorry, for Pittsburgh. Miami, like, I was surprised the Bills lost to the Steelers. Didn't really see that coming. Really didn't. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if they lost to Miami. Miami's defense is good. Miami's pass defense is very good. Their rush isn't as good as Pittsburgh's, but their secondary is outstanding. I think, obviously, the Bills have the better quarterback on Sunday. So, yeah, I don't, I'm not sure. Ask me tomorrow what my emotion is about this game, because I'm not nervous, but I do look at it and go, it's not like I'm not waking up Sunday going, well, I expect them to win today. I think they'll win Sunday, but yeah, I was completely confident last Sunday. This Sunday, there's definitely some doubt in this game on Sunday. Absolutely.
Yeah.
None whatsoever the other day against the Steelers in my mind. And that, of course, that didn't work out.
The thing I worry about is Will Fuller and Jaylen Waddle. That's mm-hmm. it. That's the number one thing. It's the whole thing. Not even to say Tua is going to be all that good.
Right.
But just that those two, I think, are dangerous.
Oh, it's a deeper receiver core, far deeper than it was last year.
Yeah. And Gesicki. I mean, yeah. The Dolphins have had success on the Bills. As much as we say, like, Josh Allen and how he owns the Dolphins, go check out the box scores of those games. The Dolphins are in a number of those games. A lot of times, outside of the ones at the end of the season last year when they blew the door. They just killed Miami last year at the end of the season.
56-26.
Yeah. I think it was, right? Take that one out of the picture. Not that you should. I mean, that one does count. The Bills have to come back, and the Bills have to scrap with Miami. You know, Allen had the one throw to Charles Clay. That's a close game. The start in Miami last year, the second game of the season, they had to come from behind to win that game. We expected them to beat the Dolphins, and they ultimately did. You're talking about the Trey White highlight, the Dolphins here.
Yeah, that's, I was sweating bullets on that one.
Miami was supposed to be the worst team in the league that year mm-hmm. and gave the Bills all they could handle in Buffalo early in the season. So, mm-hmm. you know, I feel like Brian Flores, while, yes, Allen makes incredible plays against them, his numbers are great. I want to say maybe the defense's numbers are not great against Miami.
Well, if you look at the games, so I'm going to go back to, let's see, we're going back to 2018. In the six games, five and a half, but whatever, six games that Josh Allen has started and played against the Dolphins, the Bills have given up 21, 17, 21, 20, 28, 26.
Okay.
But, you know, so which isn't, I mean, it's not bad,
not
obviously,
huge,
but the Bills offensively, I mean, they, you know, they've put up a ton of points, really, outside of that the first game, the loss, the Charles Clay game that you referenced, they had 17. And then it's 42, 31, 37, 31, 56. Although last year's game, the one in Miami, looked like the Bills were going to blow them out, right? And then Miami came back. I think they made it a one possession game. Then the Bills scored. Was there like an onside kick to hold on at the end in that game? Was that a Micah Hyde special?
Yes, a Micah Hyde returned onside kick for a touchdown.
Was it in that game?
That was the 2019 game.
All right. No, last year.
Last year
they won in Miami in week two, 31-28.
That was the John Brown late touchdown, and Josh Allen had that memorable celebration where he's...
But it ends up being a three-point game. Do you guys know if there was a late Miami touchdown and then an onside kick and the Bills just would have fielded it? I'm trying to remember how that game ended in the fourth quarter. Because I don't remember it. I didn't think it was a three-point game. I thought it was closer to like a 10-point game. But it wasn't. Anyway. Yeah, I don't... I expect them to win Sunday. But like I said, yeah, I don't feel like 100% confident in this game. As I said, I don't know why. I felt much better about their chances of beating Pittsburgh than I did Miami. The only thing... I think what we're falling back on a lot of... Well, when Josh plays Miami, he's eating them up. You know, he's done really well, even in his six games. He's run the ball extremely well. He's thrown the ball well, despite the fact that they've got a really good secondary. They've produced points, and, you know, 5-1 with the one loss being his first ever game against the Dolphins, where they actually moved the football and fell literally just short in the end zone.
That Dolphins, the three-point game from September of last year.
Yeah, what do you got?
There was a late touchdown and an onside kick.
Yeah.
That's one of those games where there were multiple fourth-quarter comebacks. The Dolphins took the lead in the fourth, then the Bills took it back.
Oh,
so that's
okay.
It.
That's what I was trying to
Miami
remember.
Miami went up 20-17 in the fourth quarter, and the Bills get two touchdowns in the span of about 2 minutes to win it and blow it open.
Yep.
Win by – they're up, and they then go up they 31-20.
Yeah, right.
But again, like Miami had a fourth-quarter lead.
Yeah. So and I kind of forgot about that. I knew they had I remember them making it close, but I didn't remember them actually going in front. So I don't know. I'm not nervous yet. Maybe I don't even think I'll be nervous tomorrow. Maybe Sunday morning closer to kick, I might get a little something going on in my stomach, and it wouldn't necessarily be the chocolate chip pancakes from breakfast. We'll see how it plays out.
It is interesting how, you know, one game and then the next game, and then the next game. And if they win by, 35 points, all will be well. But I'm telling you, like, I have a little bit of respect for Miami because of their weapons.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think about the Bills' weapons and how they did not add in the draft to their weapon haul, right? Mm-hmm. They could have, and they didn't. They went with defensive end instead in the first two picks. And then you think about their offensive line where they brought everybody back. And, you know, John Feliciano did not have a particularly great game against the Steelers. And I was reading Joe B's grades of him, and it was just a couple things about Feliciano. How I remembered, of course, through Joe's piece, that he lost 20 pounds to try and be a little bit lighter.
Right.
Maybe that was not good. Like, we'll find out over the course of 17 games of the season. So the whole thing just kind of adds up to, if the Bills got out slow out of the gate this year, or even, you know, once the season ends, however it ends, if they win the Super Bowl, we say what we say. But if they disappoint, we'll look at this offseason and think, Maybe you should have done something with the offensive line, or maybe you should have tried to pick up another weapon in the mix. You know, it's the nature of the beast. If you come up short, you ask, what could you have done differently?
Yeah, Joe's piece was interesting, and I wanted to bring up a stat that he had. I was going to get to that at some point. The play action stats I thought were interesting. I feel like, you know, in terms of the offensive line, they looked at it and thought, okay, the big contract was Milano. They wanted to keep Milano. They were going to probably anticipate having to get the Allen extension done at some point, which it turns out they did. And I think it was, you know, re-signing Feliciano and Williams as opposed to going to find a free agent tackle or guard might have been easier for them to make it all fit in the budget, to make it all fit under the cap. It could have been just as simple as continuity, guys. Why would we want to bring in new offensive linemen? We just bring the same group back, and Josh knows them, and they know Josh, so forth and so on. We don't have to break in new players. I honestly, to me, I'm thinking more about the game plan. And because I think, Jeremy, I don't think the offensive line is facing as big a challenge this week. No offense to Miami's defensive front. It's not Pittsburgh's. So I do expect the line to look better in this game. For me, I'm more curious about what Dable's thinking and what happens in this game. And Joe pointed out in his article, early play action rate against Pittsburgh. Play action on early downs was a staple of the Bills' offense last season. They used it as at the fifth highest rate in the league.
Yep.
They faked a run on early downs 40% of the time. Against Pittsburgh, 18%, the fourth lowest in week one.
Well, that's what empty sets will do, right? You cannot run play action in an empty set.
He also, so he went on to write, the explanation for the decrease is how often they ran four and five receivers. The Bills led the league in both of those formations. They ran nine five-receiver formations against the Steelers. The rest of the league combined did it once.
Wow.
So, the Bills, quote, went away from their 2020 identity in terms of the play-action portion of the game plan. I'm curious about that. What does Dable do? You mentioned this yesterday. Maybe we see a little bit more 11 personnel than four wides and five wides. They go back to the three wides, Dawson Knox and whoever the heck is in it, running back. Do they do that a little bit more? Are they going to try and sprinkle in a few more runs? To me, that's in my head more than anything else, is what does Dable do, and are they worried? Do they think they have an issue with pass protection? If so, how do they design something Sunday to help out the offensive line if they feel they need to do that too?
Yeah, the play action stat is a big one because that helps every single quarterback in the NFL. Running play action is good.
Mm-hmm.
Matthew Stafford ate up the Bears on play action. The Steelers ran a little bit more than they normally do against the Bills, and we've said it a few times, probably a few hundred times. You don't even have to run the ball well to use play action effectively. does not matter. If your running game is good, you just have to use it. Use play action all the time. So that the Bills got away from that, I mean, it's obviously by design, a very specific reason. They looked at Pittsburgh and thought, well, what, maybe we don't want to spend that half of a second or quarter of a second delaying Josh's drop back, or we want his eyes down the field as quickly as possible because of Watt and Ingram. I don't know. That's big, though, right? So just go back to your bread and butter. The other thing about Miami that's a matchup is Miami plays man against this team.
Yeah.
Right?
Good. I think that'll work. That should – well, they're very, very good, Jeremy,
that's
but I think
thing.
That should work in the Bills' favor. It's supposed to anyway.
It should. Last year in the game in Miami, Byron Jones goes out early.
That
and
was
then
a
Diggs,
big injury.
Diggs eats them up.
Yeah.
This time around, I mean, their secondary is just as good, if not better, right? You got Xavier Howard and Byron Jones.
Yep.
And
–
And they have McCourty.
It's their safeties, right.
That's a team that's going to play man. The Bills are a team that often wants to see man. The question is, does Miami have the secondary to do the job? Because not many teams do against this team. If you know the Bills are playing a matchup against a defense going to play them in man coverage, they're going to run crossers all day, and they're generally going to get open, and Allen's going to hit those plays.
Yeah.
So that's what didn't happen against Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh didn't play a lot of man, really, at all. And Miami always does, and the Bills, I mean, usually just feast on it.
Mm-hmm. But, and again, on paper, I would tell you that it should work out in the Bills' favor if they're going to go with more man-to-man coverage on Sunday. I'll throw another stat at you from Tim Graham, who did a piece about the Bills' offense. In it, he noted a stat about the zone coverage. So Pittsburgh played zone more than 75% of the time on Sunday. And Tim did the research in this and said in six games in which since the start of last season, six games where defenses have used at least 70% zone coverage against the Bills, they're 3-3. They beat the Jets, the Chargers, and the Colts last year. They lost to the Chiefs and the Titans, and then the Steelers game this past Sunday. Those are the six games where they faced predominantly zone coverage or 70% or more, and they're 3-3 in those games.
That's pretty big.
And I'm going to say the best offensive performance out of that would be Chargers game. Right? The Jets was the field goal game. Colts were, I mean, they didn't have a bad day against Indy, but Chiefs, no. Titans, no. Steelers, no. So in those six games, the offense was well below its, what they averaged last year, 30 points, 28, 30 points. Those six games, the offense did not do what it did in all the other games when they faced more man coverage.
The Chargers game, do you want Josh Allen's stats from that game?
Yeah, go ahead, because I don't. It wasn't great, right?
18 of 24 for 157.
Oh, geez, that's not great, yeah.
157 and a touchdown.
So then the Colts game offensively out of that group is probably their best game.
Yeah.
And again, that was not exactly a vintage offensive performance.
No, I'll get you the stats for Allen from that game too, because I don't remember them. Allen was, he ate him up. 26 of 35, 324 and two
Okay,
touchdowns.
I stand corrected. That is clearly their best performance
against zone. He also ran for 54. So in that game, Allen did great.
So that's why it's interesting. I mean, if you're the Dolphins, if you're Brian Flores and the defensive staff, and you know, you look at what Pittsburgh did, and again, Pittsburgh has a front line that very few teams have. But if you look at that and you look at some of these other numbers and go, all right, they don't do as well against zone, but our bread and butter's man, what do you do if you're Miami? I would assume they stick to their bread and butter and say, we trust Byron Jones and Xavier Howard and Brayton, the other kid, Noah, whatever his name is. We trust our top three. Yeah, okay.
Igbinoghene.
We trust our top three corners with the safeties to be able to handle the Bills' receivers.
You said that stat from Tim was how last year?
That was since the beginning of last season.
Okay, perfect, because that's since the Bills got good, right? Basically. I mean, the year before, they were pretty good too. But last year, they were a different story. They were a force. So how many games have they lost total since the start of last year?
Four. Well, five. Playoff game, right. Yeah.
Five.
Mm-hmm.
Three of them are against predominantly zone defenses.
Yes.
Three out of five.
And like I said, I think, I was trying to be careful of the numbers because, who's the opponent and how does that
– sure.
All right, they struggled to beat the Jets. One of the three wins was a game where I don't think they had an offensive touchdown. They had six field goals.
Yep.
You know, that's the Jets. And the Chargers were okay last season, but they weren't world beaters, obviously. And you might look at it and go, guys, one of the losses was the Chiefs, of course. All right, yeah, but when you've played predominant zones, you didn't really fare well. One exception, the win over the Colts in the playoffs. The other two victories were not great offensive performances. So that's why, for me, Jeremy, game plan, what they're doing, what they decide as the best approach, and what Brian Daboll does here with his personnel groupings, what he's putting on the field, does he scale back the 4 and 5 receiver sets at all? You know, is Miami going to spy Josh Allen and all this other stuff? I think it's really interesting to see what the Bills' offensive plan is Sunday. And do they feel, you know, if Miami's playing man, can the Bills beat them on a fairly regular basis on Sunday? By the way, it'll be hot and humid in Miami on Sunday. And the Bills will be in dark unis.
I think it's going to be hot here.
It's going to be, I know it's going to be hot here like Monday and Tuesday. We're going up like mid to upper 80s next week, I think. I don't know if it was Sunday. I think Monday and Tuesday it's hot. But Sunday in Miami, 88 for the high and 78% humidity. So might be a two-shirt day on Sunday if you're in Miami. Just if you're going to the game, pack an extra shirt with your sunscreen.
I have been to it. That's one of the road games I have been to is Miami. I went to see the Bills beat the Dolphins. They won. The year they finished 4-12.
Is that your only road win?
For the Bills?
Yeah.
Yep, I think so. It might even, it's almost my only Buffalo
I was gonna say,
sports. I've watched the Sabres lose everywhere.
Columbus, Carolina, Toronto.
Yep.
Geez, I'm trying to think where else you would have been on a Sabres road game.
Florida.
All right.
So I'm losing Florida.
Four. I saw the Bills lose in Arizona.
I saw the Bills lose in Toronto.
London. Hey, how about that? You've seen the Bills lose in multiple countries.
I've seen a lot of losing, yeah.
That's like a 1-7 road record for you
it's
or something.
Bad. Yeah. My road record is very
bad. You should just
bad.
Never travel again.
Yeah.
Well, you wouldn't be at the Super Bowl anyway. You said if the Bills made it to the Super Bowl, you'd want to be back here. Good.
100%. I have no interest in being
here. I will stay at the airport to make sure you don't fly to Los Angeles if the Bills make it to the Super Bowl.
Right. Put me on the sports no-fly list, I guess,
right? Yeah, right. Yeah. It's Thursday, and we're breaking down the Bills-Miami matchup. 803-0550 to join us, 888-550-2550. If you have something you would like to discuss about that game or something else in the world of sports you would like to bring up today. Sal will be with us this morning at 8 o'clock for the latest on the Bills as they prepare once again today, practice once again today, and prepare for Sunday's game against the Dolphins. The man who will call the game on Fox, Brandon Gaudin, is going to join us at 9 o'clock, and it's Thursday, which means it's fantasy football day. So I got to get Scott Pianowski's thoughts on my pickup of Tim Patrick. So that's coming up around 9:30. Make sure you stay tuned for all that and join us. Phone lines are open. We always love hearing from you. 803-0550 WGR.
Explosive, and they've got all the different body types, right? You've got the big, tall guys, and then you've got the smaller, fast guys, and you got Waddle who can do. He's fast. He's not small. He's strong, stronger than you think. And Dave's had him a little bit in Alabama, at Alabama there. So very good group, explosive, and very talented.
Bills head coach Sean McDermott from his comments to the media yesterday. Thanks for hanging out with us on this lovely Thursday. Just a quick note, since you brought up the Urban Meyer thing. Not that I'm doubting Urban Meyer, but I just want to point out, when I saw that story yesterday, and I really don't care if he stays at Jacksonville or goes to USC. But when I saw the story yesterday, the first thing that popped into my head was Nick Saban.
Yep.
So I looked it up, Jeremy, just to double check the dates on all this. So Saban was coaching at Miami, and there were a lot of rumors that Alabama was coming after him, and he wasn't exactly doing that well with the Dolphins, didn't really make too many friends in the organization. December 21st, 2006, he said, quote, "I guess I have to say it, I'm not going to be the Alabama coach." December 21st, 2006. 12 days later, he was introduced as the coach at Alabama. So I'm just saying, this is where Jeremy and I always tell everybody, we're not saying people lie to us in sports, but don't believe everything you hear. Just take it all with a grain of salt.
It's definitely a good sign that Urban Meyer has to be asked if he wants a different job after one game,
right? I mean, and it's a little bit, it's a little apples to oranges. Saban had been at Miami. In fact, I'm trying to remember how many seasons he was in Miami, if he was there for, anyway, this is in December. Right. It's a little bit different. He is there. He's not doing well. He has, you know, Alabama coming after him, says, no, I'm not going anywhere. I just wanted to point that out because Urban Meyer saying that means absolutely nothing. Now, he might stay in Jacksonville. He might be telling the truth. But typically, you know, you shouldn't believe what coaches and GMs and people in professional sports tell you, because they're just not going to tell you what might be happening deep down inside.
Yep.
Yeah, it is. It would be troublesome that after, you know, after one game, right? Wasn't it, I don't know, it was last week, maybe the week before, was Jason LaConfora had a piece at CBS Sports that already there's rumbling inside the organization. There are players that aren't happy. They don't like the way Meyer's running practices and all this stuff. And I'm like, okay, fine. There's always going to be someone who isn't happy with the head coach. I thought it was a little bit early to pull out the potential insurrection story in Jacksonville, but that happens, and now the USC stuff, so yeah, whatever. Just don't trust anything that anybody says. You know, who knows? Maybe Urban Meyer in 3 months is the new head coach at USC if things go really badly in Jacksonville. Oh, I forgot. I had the stat yesterday, and I don't know what I did. Remember we were talking about Urban Meyer and how, you know, there's going to be a stat at some point about how many losses he has in his first season at Jacksonville. I looked it up, Jeremy. It wouldn't be, I want to say he lost 9 games his entire time at Ohio State. So the minute he hits 10 losses in Jacksonville, he will have lost more games this season than he did in his entire run at Ohio State. And I think at Florida, it was like 13 losses over 6 years. So anyway, not a lot. You know, he will probably lose more games this season at Jacksonville than he did in his entire coaching career at either Florida or Ohio State. So maybe he does go back to college. Who knows?
I've got a football thing for you on the Bills and Steelers from that game. How much do you care at all? Do you about Pro Football Focus and their player grades?
I've moved on. We're on to Miami at this point. I know. I'm just being a jerk.
Not just this game, but like, how much do you care about grades?
Typically, I don't.
From PFF at all.
I mean, and that's not just a Bills thing. It's not, well, they never liked the Bills. I typically don't care about their grades in general.
Yeah, I mean, I'll believe them if they tell me that Cody Ford had a good day. I'll be like, okay, fine. But maybe I shouldn't, because there are two stats. Well, one of them I do believe.
Mm-hmm.
One is that Ben Roethlisberger was the worst-rated quarterback in the league.
In week one?
In week one. He was the worst.
Really?
Worst-graded quarterback in the league. Which... not that surprising. Like,
no.
He threw for 180 yards.
He was extremely average. I just thought there must have been somebody who had
somebody worse,
a worse day and a loss.
But the other one, Jerry Dulac tweeted this, and this one just kind of jumps out at me.
He's a Steelers writer.
Yes. This one jumps out at me because, you know, as much as you say, wait, there's nobody worse than Roethlisberger? Pro Football Focus ranked Minkah Fitzpatrick as the 71st rated safety.
Oh, I saw your tweet about that. Yeah.
He was terrible against the Bills. Imagine what the defense
really?
Would have. He was?
What plays did they give up?
Where was he terrible against the Bills?
Right there. In fact, how many long passing plays did they complete? One?
The Bills didn't have chunk plays, right?
They had one. It gave Gabriel Davis.
I guess maybe he got fooled on the one that Josh did not hook up with
Sanders?
Emmanuel Sanders.
Yeah.
But
He came up and made a big run stop on Breida on a key play.
That's one of the best plays of the game defensively. I mean,
he took away a first down.
He wasn't T.J. Watt. He wasn't Melvin Ingram. I don't know. Were there a million plays to be made on the Steelers secondary and the Bills just didn't do it? I mean, there were a couple.
Yeah.
But, I tend to trust that and think, like, wow, okay, I mean, I guess I should go watch the All-22, or I should, you know, do anything else in the world with my life.
But I guess, no, it's okay. You need to watch that. See, I don't, so I live vicariously, All-22 vicariously through you. They didn't, see, if you're going to tell me a safety had a bad day, first thing I would think of is they got, you know, the top literally blown off. The team went over the top on them, and they were giving up explosive pass plays. Did he miss a lot of tackles? Did the safety come up and miss tackles on a short throw and it turned into a big play?
The Cowboys combined for 780 million yards passing. A safety wasn't lower graded than the guy that kept...
I don't know. And it's not like, was he awful in run support? It's not like the Bills ran for 200 yards and Fitzpatrick was getting blown off the ball on blocks or missing guys or, you know, was he coming up helping out corners and missing in pass cover? I have no idea. So I'm not sure exactly how they reached that number. I honestly would love to hear a breakdown of why he was so bad when their defense gave up one touchdown. Kind of odd.
And very.
Yeah, no, I don't. I typically, I'll look. I mean, I'm all for any kind of information. I'm open to read anything and, you know, whatever, listen to anything and all that. But when it comes to grades, I don't remember whatever season it was when Wasn't there a game like Aaron Rodgers threw for like four or five touchdowns and they gave him a really bad grade? And I thought, what the hell did he do wrong? You brought it up.
They gave him a negative score.
Why? Like, I just,
because the touchdown passes could have been better throws.
Yeah, but okay. They were touchdown passes.
And they were too wide open. They were too easy.
Well, that's his fault. Yeah. So you penalize the guy with a lower grade because of separation. Sure, right. That makes sense.
I mean, I don't have a grudge against PFF. I think they do good work. Yeah. I just sometimes you have to say, like, huh?
Yeah.
What?
What was their? Did they have grades for the Bills' offensive line from this game?
I know you mentioned
Cody Ford.
Yeah, I have seen those. I think Feliciano got the lowest grade.
I wouldn't be surprised. I'm going to guess he was lined up against Hayward.
Mitch Morse did not get a. Right. I don't think he got a compliment grade either.
Dawkins. There was
it's pretty bad across the board.
I thought I read it might have been Joe B. In his story. I think Hayward had like one of the highest pressure rates in week one in the National Football League. So I'm guessing that John Feliciano would have been one of the lower graded guards, because I would assume odds are most of those pressures came when Hayward was going up against Feliciano, or Feliciano and Morse, maybe some combination.
There was one play I saw in the All-22, one of the Allen runs. They got a good look, and I mean, Hayward just, I think it was Hayward on the play, One man show. Like the Bills had a couple of lanes to run.
Yeah.
And the offensive line, this is kind of where you get to execution. It's Morse on the play. He just cannot hold the guy off.
Right.
And Allen ends up getting tackled on a play where he probably, if he gets by Morse's man, he's got like an easy 8 to 10 yards right up the middle.
Yeah.
But I mean, whatever. There's water under the bridge at this point, right? We should probably just.
We're on to Miami.
Just get over it.
Yeah. We're on to Miami.
We're on to Miami.
Yeah, right. Anyway. It is a football Thursday. Every day is football day, actually. 803-0550. We're on to Miami. So you can let us know your thoughts on the matchup with the Dolphins. And when we get back.
Here's your grade, by the way. Feliciano was the lowest graded. Morse was the highest graded.
Morse was of the Bills, guys.
Okay. Yeah, he got a 30.
Ooh, that seems like a.
I think it's out of that's 100,
like my.
Right?
That's gonna be. That sounds like my science grade. I mean, that's probably not a good thing. Yeah, I'm going to guess that's out of 100. I mean, if it's out of 35, you had a really good day, but I'm going to guess it isn't. When we get back, the burning question of the day. If you're okay with that, Jeremy, I think you know what I'm referring to. And feel free to have this discussion amongst your coworkers today. We'll get to that. And also remind you that you can let TRS Heating and Air Conditioning intercept your heating bills this season. Just visit WGR550.com. Look for the TRS Heating and Air Conditioning Intercept Your Heating Bills contest link. Then you can enter for a chance to win $1,200 towards your home heating bills this winter. At the end of the pro football regular season, one lucky winner will be randomly selected from all the entries to win. Now, let's get to the really important stuff today. The National Toy Hall of Fame. The 12 finalists have been released for induction into the National Toy Hall of Fame in Rochester, New York. The class of 2021, if you will. The 12 finalists are American Girl Dolls, Battleship, awesome game, Old School, not the electronic version, Billiards, Cabbage Patch Kids, Corn Popper?
Yeah, Fisher-Price Corn Popper.
That I don't think...
You do. It looks like a vacuum cleaner / lawnmower.
Oh, yeah. You push it around, the balls pop. Oh, yeah. Every kid had that. All right, that's pretty cool.
The description I read of it is that it got toddlers walking, mesmerized by bright flying balls and the popping sound.
Oh, yeah.
And I think that's probably right.
I loved it.
Yeah.
I used to push it around my parents' house all the time. I love Corn Popper. Nice. Mahjong. Masters of the Universe. I got no Masters of the Universe story, sorry. Pinata, Risk, The Settlers of Catan, The Toy Fire Engine, and Sand. Let me describe. So they have a little paragraph about each of the finalists, right? And their place and why they should be considered. Here's what they wrote about Sand.
Sand.
Sand may be the most universal and oldest toy in the world. I mean, sand's been around for a while. I guess they're right. Educator Maria Montessori has argued that sand is, quote, only one substance that the modern child is allowed to handle quite freely. Children recognize sand as a creative material suitable for pouring, scooping, sieving, right? Raking, and measuring. Wet sand is even better. ready for kids to construct, shape, and sculpt. Sand provides unique opportunities for tactical, physical, cooperative, creative, and independent free play. Now, let me just state publicly, I still have yet to get a gift for Jeremy's twins. Sorry. I'm going to wait till their first birthday at this point. Now I know I'm getting them sand. So, you know, tell everybody else in the family, tell all your friends, don't worry about it. Howard has sand covered. If you'd like, I can get it for Christmas for the twins.
Bags of sand and wrap all up, lined
yeah,
up
wrap
in the
up.
Kids' room.
Well, they got to be wrapped up. So, I'll, you know, a little bow on it and everything, right? Doesn't everybody, like, when it comes time, you know, to write your letter to Santa, doesn't everybody write down, please, I want sand this year?
Right.
I mean, sand's not a toy. It's sand.
Yeah, I mean.
Sand's in a home improvement store.
Yeah.
It's not a toy.
No, it shouldn't be.
Right?
It's. I think it's probably fine. I mean, you have a sandbox.
Sandbox. If you considered sandbox in consideration, I'd say, okay,
I
great.
Don't consider sandbox. A sandbox is something on the schoolyard.
Is a sand? Is a sandbox
I had a sandbox
already
in the hinterlands.
Did you? Well, yeah, you had nothing else to do in the hinterlands.
Yeah, I had a sandbox.
I didn't have a sandbox. I guess that's why I'm harboring some hostility towards sand.
I don't
sand.
Know if sandbox is already in. It
no, it should. Isn't.
It's
no.
not.
Rob Lucas, we were having this discussion before the show. Rob Lucas, Randy Buschover, and myself. This was like a hot topic in the newsroom this morning. And Rob said, "What you just is sandbox in?" Oh no, it was Joe Beamer. And I looked it up. I did not see sandbox in the Hall of Fame.
Hmm. Okay.
See, I feel like sand and sandbox. Like I don't know how you separate the two. You can't have a sandbox without sand. So I feel like they would both be
but
the same. You know,
you can't have sand without a sandbox.
You're yes, you can.
With sand on the beach.
And, right. Exactly.
And you don't need a pail or a bucket to play with sand. It helps, but you don't need it.
Well, I think it's a really, really big part of playing with sand. And you know what? Even you need water to make sand a lot more fun for sculpting and everything, right? See, I think sand is not a standalone toy. I
so
think
you want,
sand
you
needs
want
help.
Water inducted also. And air? You also want air?
Right, well, water is with sand. Water goes in, you know, the big guns, the water guns.
You know,
water balloons.
Just, has the imagination been inducted yet? Because, I mean, I feel
I
like that's...
I don't think so. Let me see. I don't see it on the list.
Sometimes you need one of those.
I don't see it on the list. So anyway, sand. I'm sorry. Sand is not a toy. Battleship, got it. Corn popper, fabulous. Risk, whatever. All this sand just doesn't. Toy fire engine. Wouldn't everybody have had a toy fire engine at some point? Some kind of toy truck to play with? Wonderful choices. Sand, no. Anyway, you can vote if you'd like by going to toyhalloffame.org. You can vote through the 22nd of this month.
And do they eventually go to, like, the Veterans Committee and someone's
well,
allowed in that way?
Yeah, so the three toys that receive the most public votes are then submitted and will join the other top three submissions that come from members of the National Selection Advisory Committee. And then they'll come up with a list of the inductees to announce.
How'd you like to put that on your resume?
Uh-huh.
You know?
Like, member of the Toy Hall of Fame.
I'm on the advisory committee of the Toy Hall of Fame.
The National Selection Advisory Committee for the Toy Hall of Fame. I wonder how one gets to that. Do you have to be nominated? Do you go through
probably,
like a review?
You probably put together a good body of work playing as a kid.
I got it.
And got identified young. Like, oh, this kid's going places. They play with a lot of toys. They're definitely going to be a finalist in the or a voter in the finalists in the Toy Hall of Fame.
Yeah, I mean, do you have to put in a resume which lists all the toys you had as a kid? You know, I was really adept at Battleship. I don't know. Actually, I cheated.
Nobody
at Battleship,
could be good so. At Battleship. Battleship.
If you cheated, like, you could be good at it.
It's like fake fun. It's just something to do.
We like Battleship.
There's not even strategy. It's completely
blind
luck.
No, it's
luck.
Random. Unless you're like, well, no, there were analytics. If analytics existed, you would have been able to tell, you know, he usually puts his battleship here and his destroyer there. And his, what was there, a carrier, I think? One of them was like, was it
all
five
I
holes?
Is the PT boat.
The PT boat. Wasn't it like three, four, or five holes, five pegs,
yeah,
whatever?
Yeah, the PT boat only had two, though.
Oh, two. All right, that was the smaller one. So, yeah, there could have been analytics if you had tended to put certain boats in certain areas on your grid. But I would cheat. You know, either I would try and sneak a pick at my brother's side, or, you know, he'd say, what, B9? And it would be a hit, and I'd say, miss, and I would just move it to another slot.
Have you ever seen that kinetic sand?
Huh?
Brett tweeted in about, as a parent of two, sand is the worst gift. specifically kinetic sand.
Kinetic? What is kinetic sand?
It's like manufactured sand. It's not actual sand. It's made of...
Oh, my goodness. We have fake sand?
Yeah.
Is that like field turf? You know, no, I guess I've not seen kinetic sand. And I have sand. I am a sand owner. You know,
congratulations.
Yes, but I have it to fill in, you know, bricks. I mean, I put it in to keep, you know, moss from growing and weeds and all that crap. I don't use it as a toy. I just, and I would never, like, who gives sand as a gift? I mean, nobody does that. Hey, open it up, little Johnny. What do you get? Oh, it's just what I wanted.
A bag of sand.
Thanks, Uncle Jeremy. This is awesome. I mean, just, I don't know, right? Hey, did you ever, like when I was a kid, one time I had to go get like a scratch test, right? I had allergies. So you have to get a whole bunch of injections. It is not fun. And, you know, crying, screaming, all that stuff. When you get done, mom and dad go, well, I know that wasn't fun. Tell you what, we'll go to the toy store. We'll get you a toy. Really? Great. Do you ask for sand when you get to the toy store? Could you tell me which aisle sand is in? Was it in the toy store? Bags of sand? Anyway, I digress. Let's get back to football, shall we? We are talking about the Bills game against Miami.
No, it's just going to dominate the whole rest of the show. Sand.
I think it's a workplace discussion. As I said, we had three different radio stations discussing this in the newsroom this morning. Different age groups. There was a news talk station, a sports talk station, a music station, different age ranges. We're having a very interesting discussion about this. 803-0550 to join us. 888-550-2550. We are discussing the Bills and Miami. Where would your biggest question or concerns be about this matchup come Sunday? Grab a line and join us. If you have anything else you want to get to, that's fine too. WGR.